right. Can I just confirm, is the layout looking for you where you can see everybody? Is that right?
Mm-hmm. So I think we have to click on the gallery view on the top right hand corner if we want to do that.
Yeah, I had an interesting situation yesterday where I had it on gallery view the whole time, but then when it recorded so it would only show the video of the person speaking, and I couldn't understand why, because it never normally does that for me.
I think Zoom, because all the security stuff that's happening with use all over the world, I don't know whether it's configuring itself yesterday because it's at all, because it's asking me for passwords and things yesterday, which is weird.
Yeah, my husband had the same problem yesterday with his students. There was like password stuff going on, and also if something's been pinned by accident, then it could record it that way. So I don't know, but yesterday was a bit of a not so much fun on the Zoom land for my husband.
Well, I don't know what happened, because it's like it's never happened to me before that it recorded in that format, and I couldn't understand it. And yeah, so nothing's pinned or spotlighted at the moment, so I'm just gonna hope it's, you know, cool. And I will, my lighting's annoying me today, but there's nothing I can do, so I'm just gonna ignore that and I'll brighten up the recording. Okay. I am needing a little bit of centering before we begin. I've just been feeling these past few days a lot of big energy, so I'm just like, whoo, moving through the things. So we'll settle into a little meditation just to bring our energy together and settle. Today's class is all about self-love, self-care, our relationship with ourselves, our connection with ourselves, which I think is really timely and beautiful considering everything that's going on. And we'll be doing a lot of work around looking deeper at some of, say, the patterns or stories or belief systems, or even sort of core woundings that impact your ability to feel wholehearted, unconditional love for yourself. You know, the things you might've learned about yourself throughout your life. And then we'll be taking the journey of talking about how do we come back to, you know, our essence of love that's within us and begin to practice that as like our more familiar way of being, loving ourselves versus the judgment, the criticism, the all the things that we've picked up. So that's what we're going to be diving into. Before we meditate, I just want to hear give me a word or a couple of words. How are you each feeling as you're coming into the call today? Anyone can share whenever you want.
I'll go first. I'm feeling relieved. I did, done an exam this morning, which is good to just, I've got an exam to do tomorrow, but it's just been stressing me out for weeks, so it's going to be good once the day's over. And I said no to this job yesterday because I've realized how much my life needs to slow down and how much I've got things in my way of doing that. So I have the ability to say no in a pat way that a few months ago, a year ago, I'd never have been able to do. So yeah, I feel good.
Good. I'm glad. How's everyone else feeling?
I'm feeling quite tired and exhausted. On Friday, our company started some layoffs, which I knew would be coming, and thankfully I wasn't part of them, but had to say goodbye to a lot of my colleagues, and Monday there's probably going to be some more. So just quite emotional. I'm also about to get my period, so just very tired and emotional, actually, to be honest.
Thank you for your honesty. I'm the same. I'm about to get my period. I feel the full moon brewing, and I'm like, all that energy.
Yeah. My brain is just like complete fog today. Like, I literally cannot have a straight thought either. So,
we've got a big meeting today at work as well. So goodness knows what will happen. But surrender, like you said in your podcast, Connie.
So much of that, and just staying open, because the situation is just changing and moving every day, and we just got to adapt and flow with whatever's happening. Brigitte, how are you feeling?
Very mixed. I've been really allowing for my feminine energies to express herself. My husband, just quick, not going to spend a lot of time on this, we're going to be, I think it's going to be 22 years this year in June that we've been married. Yeah, and this is, we've been through other tough times, but this has been particularly trying for a lot of reasons. And he's, both of us are very emotional right now. And usually it's like one or the other. And then you can kind of hold space for each other, but that's kind of like, and when mine's coming up, I just feel like it's just like raw and it's just there. And we have a huge explosion. Things don't go well, but then they do afterwards. We kind of have a, you know, we sleep on it or we have a separate, we don't separate, but you know, like he goes into his room and I go to my bathroom or whatever. And because we just don't have enough space to some degree. And so I'm feeling a lot of mixed things. I'm feeling very connected and absolutely in love with him. But at the same time, there's like, I also don't feel safe. So, but then I do, because eventually it is safe, but the process isn't terribly safe. So I'm kind of all over the place right now. That's all I can say about where I'm at right now. It's a really interesting time.
Thank you for your honesty as well. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
Hey, are you there or are you maybe driving or something at the moment? Do you feel to share anything on how you're feeling? I know she's got a video off.
She's kind of here.
Yeah, so I'm not sure, she might be doing something at the moment, but I just thought I'd check. No, that's okay. Maybe she's kind of got us on speaker somewhere and she's doing some things. That's all good. All right. So let's just do a little centering before we dive into the class, just to bring our energy together, because I just need to bring mine in a little bit. It's a bit. All right. So just closing down our eyes. Just taking a few slow, deep breaths. Just allowing whatever is present with you in your body today to be with you. It's okay if it's there, emotions, thoughts. But just feeling the connection back to your body that's in the here and now. Your body that is still, solid. It's a place to return to, it can be your anchor. I personally have my hands kind of on my thighs at the moment, just really anchoring into my legs. You might want to have your feet on the floor or just bring awareness to whatever part of your body is touching something. Maybe your spine is leaning against the chair or your hips. Just feel the support of your body. Whether you feel your connection to the earth or connection to your own legs or the support of what's holding your body in this moment. And just deepening that breath right into your belly. So you're feeling your breath fill up. Belly, your chest, your throat. And with every breath out, just let go of anything that you feel to release in this moment. And just feel your heart energy just begin to become activated. Just begin to feel that energy in your chest. Mm-hmm. Just taking a few final deep breaths into your body, into whatever's present with you right now, and into your heart. When you feel ready in your own time, you can open up your eyes. All right, and let's get started. I might pop everyone on mute just for the start of this class and spotlight me so you can hopefully all see me okay. And let's rock and roll. Okay. So I shared a little bit at the start there that we're talking about the relationship with self. That's the focus for our class today. And we're going to be looking at the experience of love, the love that we experience within ourselves and for ourselves, and what that is currently like, and what this relationship with ourselves is currently like, and where we can work on this and deepen this and make it more connected and more supportive and more kind and more intimate, right? Because I think what we need to remember about relationships, any relationship, is that they are alive, ongoing, constantly shifting and changing experience. And sometimes I have found with, when I've even thought about self-love, I've sort of seen it as like a destination or something to strive for, or this idea of what it would look like if I loved myself, or sort of these steps I'm taking to sort of reach an outcome. But I really, you know, when we're looking at relationship with self, this is a relationship you're going to be in for your whole life. And like any relationship, we know they have good days and bad days. Sometimes you feel super connected. Other times you're almost like, I don't even know if this is the right relationship for me. You know, we can shift and change all the time. And I think we've got to bring that really flexible, open relationship with ourselves too, because I know we can become really rigid sometimes. And I've often heard it from people, if you're going through a bit of a funk of not really loving yourself or not feeling really good about yourself, that can be hard to navigate. And we can feel like we're sort of failing at self-love if we're feeling that way. But it's just the ebbs and flows of this relationship that you're constantly going to be in. And so working on our relationship with ourselves and working on self-love is a daily, moment to moment, hour to hour, week to week, month to month, year to year practice that we're constantly going to work on. And sometimes we're going to do great at it, and other times we're not going to be doing great at it. And I think it's one of the first things is dropping any of the pressure and the expectation and the ideas we have in our head of self-love, and really seeing it more as just a deepening of our understanding of ourselves, a deepening of our knowing of ourselves, of our needs, our wants, our desires, of what makes us feel loved and supported and nourished and nurtured, and, you know, what our wounds are, those places where we still hold emotion and pain and hurt, and we're sensitive about them, and then knowing how to work through those. And it's allowing, you know, all of us to be here. Again, self-love isn't like the elimination of any more negative or shadow-based aspects of ourselves. It's more of like an understanding of those, and then learning how to support ourselves through those and resolve what we can around what feels unresolved. So I think it's just this sort of certain perspective I want to bring in as a foundation around how I sort of see this work of self-love that we embark on. And it's, I have this quote that I love from Marianne Williamson that I think she put at the start of one of her books. I can't remember what book it is, but she says, love is what we are born with. Fear is what we learn here. And so the teaching of that is that fear is learned behavior. Fear meaning anything that's not love, you know, any of these patterns that come from fear, whether it is the judgment, the criticism, the not enough, the unworthiness, the tiny ways we tear ourselves down, right? that is all just learned behavior. And so I actually really see self-love as a journey of unlearning. We're on a journey of unlearning all of these things we picked up through our life that are not our truth, that don't nourish us and support us and help us become our best selves. We peel back the layers. So I like to see it as, if you imagine an energy inside of you, like a glowing, radiant light, or I sometimes see it as like a diamond or a crystal, however you see it, that being your essence of this pure, whole, unconditional love. And then these layers, sometimes like I've seen them as almost like blankets or things that get put on top of that light and dim it and dim my connection to it. And it's not that that love ever goes away. I just become disconnected from it. I just get so caught up in whatever these layers are that are on top of it that I can't see the light anymore, but it never goes away. And so again, just as just a little reframe, because I often sort of see people approach self-love as, again, like something I need to do and a destination to get to, versus it's already here. It's already who I am. I'm just clearing the things I've picked up through my life that are disconnecting me from really feeling that, which is why I love that Marianne Williamson quote. And I think it's important to remember that anything that we have learned can be unlearned. And I know when we have these very, these ways of seeing ourselves or thinking about ourselves that feel very real, they feel very true because we've spent our whole life accruing evidence to prove them to ourselves. But it's learned behavior and therefore it can be unlearned. And so how do we learn a behavior? How do we ingrain a behavior? Through repetition. So think about something that you once learned how to do in your life. And I always like just using the analogy of learning how to drive a car, because most of us can relate to that. There was a point in time where you didn't know how to do that and you learned that skill. And how did you learn it? And how did it become so familiar and habitual and ingrained now? Through repetition. You practiced over and over and over and over, and you eventually became really good at it, and it then became programmed into the unconscious now, so you don't even have to think about it. You can just do it. But let's say you wanted to learn how to ride a motorcycle. You no longer wanted to drive a car. You wanted to learn how to ride a motorcycle. What you would need to do is stop ingraining that pattern of behavior of driving a car. So you'd probably stop getting in the car and driving it, sort of, so you could unlearn everything that was ingrained about that. And you need to learn some new skills. And probably when you very first started riding that motorbike, you'd be like, oh my God, like I'm terrible at this. And this feels so unfamiliar and so clunky. And like, I just want to go back to driving a car because that's what I'm used to. But if you continued to practice that, it would then become familiar. It would get programmed in and it would become part of your unconscious program. You wouldn't even need to think about it and off you would go. And that might sound like a really irrelevant kind of example, but it just demonstrates that some of what we believe about ourselves at this point is just literally because it was put in. We had an experience when we were 2 or 4 or 5 or 10 or however old we were, and we spent our whole life practicing that. And so it's really, really real and true for us, but it doesn't mean it is the truth about us. I think it's a really important distinction. Like, I know when I get really caught in some of these stories I have about myself, like it's really hard to open up to the possibility that it's not the truth about me because it feels so true. But I think we have to remember it only feels true because it's incredibly familiar and we have manifested evidence to prove that to ourselves, but doesn't mean it is the truth about us. Just like, you know, maybe you've been practicing self-criticism your whole life. It's just like, you know, driving the car. It's like so familiar to you. And then you want to learn how to practice self-love and you're like, oh my God, I feel clunky in that. I don't know how to do that. Self-criticism just seems like, you know, what's most comfortable to me. But doesn't mean self-criticism is more of your truth. It just means it's more familiar. So as I was saying, I sort of feel this journey of self-love is a massive journey of unlearning. And I think it's also dropping any ideas we have about what self-love means and the pressure and the expectations around that. And definitely it's more about unconditional love than it is about becoming a lovable version of ourselves. So I think that the goal here, if we use the word goal, but the intention behind it is more like to learn how to love and embrace all of me and who I am right now, rather than, you know, and I did this a lot in my 20s, striving to become a version of myself that I would think was more lovable and who would be more easy to love in my eyes, which, you know, that just leads us down a path of still never feeling enough and having to do more and change ourselves. I think the desire to love ourselves more inspires us to want to take better care of ourselves. I think, yeah, this journey of self-love may make you want to shift and change and grow in some way, but it doesn't mean that you can't love yourself before that happens, right? Or love the imperfect parts of yourself. So I want to talk a little bit now about some of these kind of blocks to love that we have that we've all created within ourselves, the wounds, and then the stories that we kind of tell ourselves through our lives that really block us feeling wholehearted self-love. Where am I going to begin? So I kind of see it as we have wounds. A lot of us would identify with that kind of word, wounding. And that might be based on a core experience we had when we were younger. And then usually from that kind of wound or that key experience is a whole pattern then of thinking and speaking to ourselves and perceptions of ourselves and a whole identity that then flows on from that. So it's almost like the core experience, and this doesn't have to have happened when you were 2 or 5 or whatever. I mean, we've spoken about this before, but I've had key experiences at 31 that really still impacted my feeling of self-love, and I put a lot of power in those experiences. So these things can happen at numerous points throughout our life, and I just want to talk about some ways to work through this stuff. So, you know, we all go through life having experiences, and when an experience happens, you know, the experience is just the experience. But what impacts us the most about the experience, and this is not to take, you know, away from those of us that have had very traumatic and painful and challenging experiences or experiences where things happened to us that we weren't fully in control of or able to change or stop, but we basically, there's the experience, and then there's how we internalize it. Then there's how we store it within ourselves, the emotions we hold around it, and the stories we tell ourselves, and the meaning we make out of it. And so I think it's really valuable when you're looking at, you know, your work around loving yourself is, and this might take quite a bit of reflection, or maybe you've probably actually done a lot of this work, but reflecting on what were some of the key experiences throughout your life, maybe from being very young, even up until now, that have really shaped your perception of yourself, have really shaped how loving you feel towards yourself, how you treat yourself or speak to yourself, right? I think it's really worth sort of reflecting on those. And, you know, I think about it like an example for me, for example, because this is the thing, when we don't really own our part in it, we can really feel like a victim to these things, like they've happened to us, and then we're not really able to change them. But when we own our part in them, then we can do the work to unhook everything around it that's keeping us stuck. So, for example, for me, I don't know if I've told this story before, but when I was 2, my little sister was born. And when I was 4, my little sister, who was then 2, began having epileptic seizures, uncontrollable epileptic seizures. And for me at the time, I experienced it as, you know, my parents becoming, it felt like more absent, not as available, it didn't feel like they were as interested in hearing what was going on for me. They always seemed busy. They were always off at the hospital in appointments. And there was this feeling in me of I'm not as important as my sister. And I internalized that, what I kind of internalized around it was, it's not okay for me in this time to have wants and needs. I need to just be quiet and responsible and good to ensure I don't add any burden to my parents. And that seems like a really profound thing for like a four-year-old to, it's not really a conscious process we go through as kids, but we do internalize experiences and make meanings and make inner decisions around how we're going to cope with what's happened. That shaped me for a really, really long time. So I internalized this emotion of being very alone and feeling like I had no one to support me. It turned me into the fiercely independent woman that I am today. And, you know, it caused me for a lot of years to never feel like I could depend on anyone except myself. And that if I was ever really talking about me, I was burdening people. So I just kept things to myself a lot. And it wasn't until I went to a personal development program a few years ago with Preston Smiles and Alexi Panos, and we did this unpacking thing on my sister, and he identified with me that I had so much anger towards my sister, and he got me to actually scream out loud, like, F you, Laura, like to actually get a lot of the anger out towards my sister. But what I realized in that moment was I was still a victim. I was still being a victim to that thing that happened to me when I was four. I was still letting that experience shape me now. And so how do we kind of, because this stuff's really programmed in, right? And it really impacted my feeling of, yeah, self-worth and deservedness of being seen and acknowledged and seen as valuable. So it really, really affected me. So how do we kind of unpack that, right? So let's just kind of talk through it. So we can go back to, say, an event like that. Let's say a key event. I'll talk about the one at 31 for me as well. We can go back to that key event and we can see what was kind of unfolding as the event, the situation. And then we can see, as the little child that we were, however old we were, we can see what was the emotion that I felt within me around that event, and what was the story I created, and what was the meaning I made about me? So I made the meaning that my sister was more important than me. And this has affected me like in my visibility, in my work, not really feeling like what I have to say and share is that important. I internalized it that way, and I need to take responsibility for how I internalized it. That's my part in the healing process. And then looking at how do I continue to reinforce this now? You know, as I've grown up, well, it's almost like I keep telling myself that. I've told myself that story for so long. No one really cares what you have to say, Connie. Like, it's not that important. Don't take up space. Don't burden people. Just keep it to yourself. Just work through it alone. It plays out now in my relationship. Whenever stuff comes up for me, I just want to isolate and go and deal with it by myself. And I can't do that. I can't always pull away when stuff comes up. So you can see how you continue to reinforce it by continuing to tell the story that was ingrained to thee at a young age. You can then look at, are there any emotions around this that I haven't fully processed? And that's why that experience in that workshop where I got to actually let out the anger was so, that was really transformative for me, and a lot shifted after that, because I didn't realize how much anger I was holding around that key experience. And then you can ask yourself, is there a more empowering meaning I can create around this too? Now, I'm making this a very simplistic process. This may involve a lot more kind of feeling your way through what's arisen. I'm sort of talking about this in a quick way because I've actually resolved a lot around it already. But how can I create a more empowering meaning around this? Well, really, when I look back on it, as the conscious adult that I am now, what was going on actually meant nothing about me. It meant my parents were in a state of absolute panic because my sister was sick. And all of those meanings I created about me were not actually the truth in the situation. And it's almost like, okay, if I hadn't created those meanings, and maybe I'd created a different meaning, how would that have impacted the rest of my life? I mean, if I didn't have that story that I shouldn't take up space and I shouldn't burden other people and I shouldn't ask for help and support, like you can almost see this whole new possibility could have been created in terms of who I would have been in my life. So this is just a, I mean, some of you may have already done a lot of this type of work, but you may actually find, particularly if you're wanting to deepen into your relationship with yourself or get into a relationship with someone else, you might notice that there are things that are still unresolved for you. Another just quick example that I'll give is that when I was 31, the reason my last relationship ended was because I asked my partner to live with me. I wanted to go to the, you know, another level with him and want further commitment. And he said he couldn't give me that commitment and our relationship ended. And that was a very, very painful experience for me. Now, I could have internalized that experience in so many different ways, but I internalized it and I made a story of I'm not enough for a man to commit to me. I'm not enough for a man to commit to me. That was how I internalized it, which is related to my whole life experience of my father, my birth father decided to not stay with my mom when he found out she was pregnant. So he left when my mom was about 4 months pregnant with me. And then throughout my childhood, my father was my stepfather was having affairs. So I watched infidelity and I watched a man unable to commit to a woman. So I had this big story of like, I'm not enough for a man to commit to me. And that has been with me for a really, really long time. I've gone back a lot to that time to realize, and the way I can actually completely reframe that is, oh my gosh, that was my divine guidance intervening and ending this relationship because that guy and I were not meant to be together. Like, thank goodness that happened. It doesn't have to have a story about me and my worth. But this, I came up against this only recently because my current boyfriend and I were talking about living together. And I had so much fear about having this conversation with him, like literal terror, because I was convinced he was going to say, I can't commit to you and I want to, you know, and I was like, well, this relationship is going to have to end. And we had some really, really vulnerable, very powerful conversations and it ended up going the opposite way. And he's moving in with me in a week, which is crazy. And we've ended up, it ended up like changing, right? The story like shifted now. And now I'm having to program in this story. Like I am worthy. I am enough that like it is possible for someone to commit to me. And this is how we unravel these stories. We both look at the core wounding and then we look at the way we personally continue to program it in by telling that to ourselves. And so one of the key processes I also teach around, and if you've done some of my other courses, you might have heard it, around working through the stories and the thoughts that are still playing out is this process of catch, witness, choose again. And it's a really powerful mindfulness practice for intercepting any way of thinking about ourselves that is not loving and kind and supportive. So, for example, in the lead up to wanting to talk to my partner about our relationship, I was noticing all of my old fears come up. And so my first step is to catch them. So rather than just letting those stories play and feeding them, I did for a little bit, mulling over them, believing them, being like, yes, see, this is why, and staying anchored in them. Instead, I catch them and I go, okay, whoa, look at that thought in my head. I can see it. I can feel it. Let me just notice it and stop. And then I witness it and I witness, okay, what's going on inside of me right now? I'm feeling anxiety. I'm feeling fear. I'm telling myself he's going to respond the same way my other partner did. I'm telling myself I'm not enough for him to commit to me. I'm telling all this, right? So I witness all of the inner stuff going on. And that might then require, you know, some processing of emotion and all that stuff. But then the third step is choose again. And this is where we get back in charge of how we're thinking about ourselves. And we make it a conscious rather than an unconscious process. So choosing again, and this is what I had to do in the lead up to these sort of having the courage to talk to him was consciously choosing a different way of thinking. So, you know, it might be sort of saying things to myself like, the fact that your last relationship ended does not mean that you're not worthy of someone committing to you. It just means he wasn't the right person for you. And you've been in a lot of relationships that have had huge amounts of commitment. You've been in many 3-year relationships where people have made commitments to you. You're currently in a relationship where someone's making a commitment to you. You are worthy, Connie, of love and devotion and commitment. And it's just consciously practicing that. Now, I may not believe that right away, and that may not feel like a very familiar way of thinking about myself, but I'm consciously choosing in that moment, like that Marianne Williamson quote, to break the pattern of the learnt story and find and feel for what way of thinking about myself is in alignment with the essence of love, of who I really am, and consciously choosing now to, it's like I was saying, how do we build that new skill through repetition, continuing to intercept the old way of thinking and bring in the new way of thinking that will support me and make me feel good about myself, you know? So let's pause for a moment, because I'm going to move on to talking more about self-love. And I just want to, you know, after all that I've just shared, let me bring my cancer spotlight video. Does anyone have any thoughts or reflections on that? Is there anything that was coming up as I was sharing that? Any questions? Anything you want to talk out around it? We all good? Or
I can share. I just really resonates with me. I think a few years ago, I had no idea about all of these stories that were inbuilt in my head. And I think I did a program called Landmark, which was really helpful just from a kind of a what's happened in the story point of view a few years ago. But then I think really bringing with my psychotherapist, understanding, we do a lot of kind of the early life 0 to 8 sort of thing, and realizing that my mum's always saying, oh my God, we gave you such a good childhood, I loved you so much, but it was really what I perceived. And the stories I made up in my head that I wasn't loved, they just tried to control me, like I was bad. And just learning to recognize them over time has been really, really, really powerful and really healing. But I love your definition of self-love, and that it's an ongoing journey that you've got to continue to work on, and that you just can't just uncover one rock and move on and it's going to be perfect. But I really like the way that you're putting it with the catch witness and choose again more into the emotional side as well, because that really resonates and really gives you the power back to make different choices. Resonate really strongly.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing. Awesome. Anyone else? Any other thoughts?
I actually thought this was really interesting. I had to disappear real quick to use the restroom in the middle of all of this. Pardon me. But it popped into my head because I've been doing a lot of journaling from my heart. And that was really clearly from my heart because my hand was sore at the end. It was like coming out. And then other journaling I've done where it's telling me, just be guarded. Your feminine can come out later, not right now. It's not appropriate. Like I said, all the stuff about the fear, particularly with my partner, that's because even though it's uncomfortable when we go through it, and I'm not really particularly eloquent or it's messy, at the end of the day, he pulls through for me every single time. And I pull through for him every single time, which is beautiful. That's not my upbringing. And I think there's a real distinction between my heart saying, because my heart stuff is saying, you're here, you're good, let it go, you just need to get your bearings. And the other stuff is saying, guard, guard, guard. Mm-hmm. I think that's programming, cloaked with feeling like it's intuitive. So I think that's going to be interesting for me to kind of figure out. I think it's really clear in the language and literally the way I write, like it's a physical sensation that's different, I think. Because that just feels like, that's what came into my mind when I had to leave for a second. I thought, that's really interesting. That's my mother's patterning of, you're not allowed to feel. You're not feeling that. or you feel that way and it makes me uncomfortable. And I'm putting that onto him. Whereas the truth is we're both uncomfortable, yes, but we both get through it and kind of muck our way through, which I think is super healthy and beautiful. So I'm seeing a real interesting thing there of intuition or heart or and programming, if that makes sense.
It makes so much sense. And we actually get to a point where it becomes very subtle and very difficult to actually determine, is this my wound or is this my intuition? Or is this what proved me in this moment? Or is this a reaction? I'm exactly the same. My tendency, I've had all that coming up in my relationship, and my tendency is to close off from my partner and make him like the enemy. And I have all the fantastic ways that I'm able to do that. But I think when we understand our woundings enough, it may take time to really land on it. But something I've almost been thinking in myself is, okay, what's my tendency? Like, what have I practiced throughout my whole life? Well, my tendency is to close, isolate, push away.
Yeah.
What would doing the opposite of my natural tendency look like? It would look like opening, inviting in, expressing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's my practice. And it's so, I'm going to be honest, so fucking hard. And every part of me doesn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. But I'm having to identify, what is super familiar, because I can see I've done it my whole life, and I'm leaning into trying to do the exact opposite of it.
Opposite.
Even though it's terrifying.
Yes, that makes so much sense. It does make sense, because I even, a lot of the time when I'm like journaling or doing any exercises, I'm like, well, what would I really think I don't need to do right now? Go do that.
Yeah,
because that's what you need to do. And I feel like what you just said, that makes perfect sense of, okay, this I know the outcome of, like, wall yourself off. I'm good at that. Making myself small, putting myself in a little tiny box. Really good at that. So the opposite of that would be just keep expressing. And that freaks me the hell out. But as I said, we do okay at the end. It's just, there's this whole uncomfortable thing we have to go through. But that's, I think, part of being in a relationship. Just like relationship with yourself, like you were saying the same thing. It's like, being in a relationship, it's different every day. You don't.
Yeah.
It's true.
But then
it's really uncomfortable, but it's really good. But it's just like, okay, that's the work.
Yeah. And this can apply to our relationship with ourselves too. Like if I know my tendency is to look in the mirror and criticize myself.
Yes.
Even though I can justify all the reasons why I'm going to do that. Well, maybe I'm just going to like be like, you know what? That's just my learned pattern of behavior. Maybe I'm going to try the complete opposite today.
Opposite.
I'm going to look in my eyes and just say something beautiful to myself, because that's like the only way to break the pattern.
Yeah. And that's one thing also I've been doing, because I've been taking, I don't know how you guys are doing in Australia, but in the States, we can't go out. Well, we can, but for essential. So I've been making a point of taking a shower, doing my hair, makeup and everything. And I've been actually, for a change, saying, you're beautiful. Mm-hmm. As opposed to what always was, look at that, look at that, look at that, look at that, look at that. And so I've really purposely broken that, which has been cool. But it's still really wonky.
Yeah.
It's wonky.
Yeah. And I think it's about loving ourselves through the wonkiness and the messiness.
Yeah. That's you nailed it. That's what it is. Loving ourselves through the wonkiness and the messiness. Because it's going to be messy.
Yeah.
It's going to be.
Yeah. I went into a full emotional meltdown on my partner yesterday. And I noticed after he left, I was in a lot of self-judgment. I was like, oh, Connie, you acted like such a child. Like, but I was like, you know what? That was my process. And as much as I wasn't so proud of myself acting like that, it actually was very healing, whatever, unfolded from that. And so, okay. That was where I was at. I'm going to set the intention to manage that better next time. But that's what happened, and that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Steph, anything for you to share?
Nothing in particular, but definitely resonating with a lot of, I think, the stories from childhood. Like, that's something that I've been working on a lot over the past few years, because definitely there's been a lot of stories, particularly around like just this idea that I'm not I always had this idea as a kid that love was not in the cards for me for whatever reason. And I think that paints a lot of why it's been so hard for me to find a relationship, because just for some reason, it was just like a truth, like the way the sky is blue. It was just like, yeah, no, like I'll never be in a relationship. I'm not sure why I had that idea. And now it's, you know, in my mind, I realize it's no longer true, but that's still kind of what in our discovery call that I'm still working on having my body believe as well. Cause I think it's still sort of ingrained in me, even though I know logically now that that's not the case. But definitely like I have, and it's some stories around like worthiness as well, that are just like very much still ingrained that I am working on. So it's interesting how those stories just paint how we enter the world.
And you're right. A lot of us have them as they are just as true as the sky is blue, 100%.
Yep.
100%. But I think the minute we then take it out of being that type of truth into we're questioning it a little, the minute you question something, you start to shake the strength of it, you know? Mm-hmm. The minute you're like, hang on a second, well, why is everyone else, is love on the cards for everyone else except me? Like, that's not actually possible. So this is something that I learned about myself in some shape or form, okay? So it's just a learnt way of thinking that feels really familiar. Already we're starting to shake it a little. And I think it's the decision of like, right, this might take me some time, but my intention is to change that and start to believe whatever would feel like the truth for you of like, I'm so worthy and deserving of love, or love is actually part of my purpose for being here. Like getting into a relationship is actually really part of my soul purpose in this lifetime, and I'm destined for it.
Yeah, definitely.
Beautiful. Thank you, loves. Thank you for sharing. Renee, not sure if you're there. Is there anything you feel to share? No, I don't think so. Just thought I'd check. All right. I'm going to go back to my spotlight. Just check everyone's muted. Okay, beautiful. Let's get my notes back up. Okay, so as we were saying, and I'm glad all the sort of the perspectives I was giving on self-love were supportive and resonated. It's a learning to love ourselves, particularly unconditionally. Because I mean, if you were someone that grew up with parents and say a mother figure who maybe didn't have the best relationship with herself, that was just what was modeled to you. My mom, oh my gosh, like the queen of self-criticism, queen of, you know, all she said out loud was just constant judgment and criticism of herself. And if you didn't have particularly a feminine figure modeling to you what healthy self-love looks like as a woman, how would you have ever learned that, you know? So that's why we come on these personal growth journeys and we consciously choose our mentors and people we want to have help us so that we can now get what we need to learn and embody love, because it wasn't always modeled for us when we were young, which is just, you know, our parents doing the best that we could do. But also, I don't think unconditional love is really modeled in our society either, particularly as we're growing up. There's a lot about being praised for a certain way of being, whether it's being high achiever or good at sport or a good polite girl or a boy that doesn't cry or whatever it is, you know, there's a lot of societal programming around that. Our parents tend to bring us up in that way as well. I think we talked about this in one of our first classes. And the school system, you know, you're a good little girl when you sit still in your chair and you listen and you pay attention. And I think when we're really little, perhaps that feeling of unconditional love is there. But I know I personally, as a child, grew up feeling, not that my parents didn't love me, but I did feel like aspects of myself were more lovable than other parts. So giving unconditional love to ourselves is almost a foreign thing too. Like we're used to loving ourselves conditionally. And I even wonder, I'm really trying to work on this in my relationship, but I'm sometimes a little bit conditional with my love in the relationship too. And I'm really having to look at that, because I'm like, I'll give him more love when he acts in the way I want him to, but then I'm going to withdraw my love when he's not acting how I want him to. And love becomes this commodity. I mean, I actually felt that as a kid, like my mom used love as a commodity. Love was given when I was acting how she wanted me to act, and then she would withdraw her love from me. And we actually do, we end up loving ourselves in the same way. And, you know, what we're wanting to work with here, and it was just what we were so beautifully talking about, is loving the messy, imperfect part of ourselves that's on the journey and that's trying to figure it out and that makes mistakes and that sometimes doesn't act, you know, as our highest self or our best self, but not then punishing ourselves and taking love away because we didn't meet the standard or expectation we were holding on ourselves in that moment. You know, that's where we're in this pattern of conditionally loving ourselves. And the only thing really that stops us experiencing unconditional love is all of the rules and conditions that we place on love and the standards we have around what makes us lovable or worthy of love. And we've all got that, those kind of rules set up in our mind. And which is why it's just, we've just got to be careful on this journey that we're not sort of continuing that by being like, oh, I love you when you do your morning routine, and I love you when you go to yoga, and I love you when you show up for your work, and I love you when you have your nails done and you practice your self-care. But then when you get triggered and scream at your partner, or when you emotionally eat while watching Netflix, or when you don't go to that, do that fitness class that you said you were going to do, I don't love you as much then. And I think, you know, it's really natural to feel that way, but like, it's loving our shadow parts as much as we love our light parts, and loving our flaws as much as we love our strengths, and loving our imperfections and our weaknesses as much as we love, you know, what is incredible, and our talents, all the things about us that, you know, that it's even interesting, those judgments, right? Though I'm sort of saying, oh, a shadow side of yourself is different to a light part of yourself, but maybe it's actually not. Maybe it's all just different expressions of you, and maybe not one is actually better than the other. Maybe it's just societally we're told, oh, a woman's nicer when she looks beautiful and she's being polite, versus when, you know, she's not wearing makeup and she's screaming because she's pissed off. You know, they're just rules that have been told to us. but I, at the same time, I do think there are also things that can help activate a feeling of love in ourselves. Like, I think, like I said at the start, the desire to love yourself more can inspire you to want to embody and step into more of your highest, brightest self. As long as it feels like it has a lightness and an inspiration to it, rather than a should and an obligation. In order to be loved, you have to do this. But I think it's worth reflecting on, and it was something I was even thinking about before this class. It's like, when do I actually, like, typically love myself the most? What makes me feel really proud of myself? What makes me feel like a real sense of lightness and happiness in who I am? And we don't want to make that be just about doing, because for a lot of us, that actually comes from when I do all these things, I usually feel that feeling. But, you know, that might be one element of your self-love work. Like, I know I feel a lot of pride in myself when I see myself show up, you know, when I see myself honor my commitments and do the things that are really important to me and really look after myself and really share my gifts in my work. And if you know that if there are things that create a sense of confidence in you, a sense of pride, a sense of just feeling really good about yourself, there's nothing wrong with then putting your energy into practicing that more, because it is a pretty natural thing that we all, like, I do feel better about myself when I've had a beautiful day of both self-care and work and doing things that make me feel good, versus if I've just spent the day on the couch watching Netflix and eating Deliveroo. One's not better than the other, but I just naturally do feel better when I do one of those options. So those things can definitely help us, can help deepen the feelings we get to experience within ourselves. We don't want them to be the only reason we love ourselves. And I also think it's like actually exploring within yourself what loving yourself would look like to you or would feel like to you. Because I think it's going to be different for all of us. But love sometimes is too strong of a word in that, you know, I think sometimes I've thought about doing like affirmations in the mirror or loving parts of my body that I have judgment on. And it feels too extreme to sit in the mirror and be like, I love you. Sometimes it does. Or to touch a part of my body that I don't really love and be like, oh, I love my thighs or whatever aspect of my body it is. But sometimes there's other feelings that are on the spectrum of love that aren't quite as extreme as wholehearted love that are still more kind and loving than the other ones of criticism, judgment, negativity, shame, which is sometimes, you know, acceptance is one of them. Acceptance is a quality of like, right now in this moment, I may not love this, but accepting means it is what it is right now. It's here. This is my body right now. This is where I'm at right now. And acceptance simply means I stop fighting with that and I stop judging that and I stop making that wrong. I just let it be. So acceptance for me has been a beautiful doorway into self-love. I know when I was younger, I used to have, oh my God, I had horrible acne, right? Like horrible. And it was very, very, I could just not practice love of that part of myself at all. But that, you know, the things that helped me a little bit was just acceptance. It was like, I don't like this. I don't love this, but this is how I am right now. And I'm just going to stop beating up on myself about that and fighting with that. And the acceptance just relieves some of the heaviness and angst around it and allows it to, just to be. And then from there, you know, you might be inspired to make a change or do something differently. But whenever we are pushing against something and say we want to lose weight because we don't like where our body's at right now, it's like all of our focus is on what we don't want and don't like. And we're trying to get away from that, but we're actually still giving all of our attention and energy to it. But when we come into acceptance, acceptance kind of neutralizes the emotion a little bit. And then from there, it inspires a new choice. So if it is related to your body and where your body's at right now, it might just be like, okay, well, this is where my body's at right now. Like right now in this moment, it actually is what it is. Like I can't change that. I'm just going to take a breath into that and just allow that for the moment. But is there something I would desire instead? Is there a change I feel to create here? And if there is, what is it that I would like? Well, I would like to show more love and respect for my body, or I'd like to make food choices that are more kind and gentle to my body, or I'd like to really look after my body by moving it more. And then these choices can come from love, not from hate and shame and trying to get away from something we don't want. So that's why acceptance, I find, is a beautiful doorway. And if I'm ever struggling with loving parts of myself, I lean towards acceptance more as a beginning point. I find it a little easier. You know, other qualities of love that aren't as extreme as wholehearted love are just things like understanding, compassion, you know, having compassion, say, for our past choices, our past self, forgiveness. Choosing to forgive yourself because you were just doing the best you could in that moment. You know, when I used to be in a cycle of emotional eating, the cycle was usually I would try to change that behavior by just feeling so much shame about what I'd done that I would then set this intention, I'm never going to do that again. I'm just going to go clean eat now. And it was so extreme. What made it easier to change that behavior was looking back on, say, a time that I did it and just attempting to feel some compassion and understanding for why I did that, where I was at the time when I was doing that, how much pain I must have been in to default to that pattern of behavior to soothe me in that moment, how heartbroken it feels to not have any other tool besides that to help me in that moment. And to forgive myself, because in that moment I was needing support, and that was the only thing that I had in that moment to support me. And then from that softer energy, I was able to change my behavior then by choosing things that were much healthier rather than trying to change from a place of shame. Yeah, so I just want to really mention that. So yeah, gentleness, kindness, forgiveness, compassion, understanding, acceptance. These are all just, yeah, on the spectrum of love, but are just softer steps we can, of things we can be practicing. You know, and it's a way we can look at ourselves too. So actually to be perceiving ourselves through just a softer lens, that brings in those heart qualities of understanding and compassion. And another thing that helps with these with this sort of work of self-love is the conscious giving of attention and time and energy to our self-love and self-care practices. And again, self-love isn't just about this and about what we do. But what I've found is that when you set aside that time to devote to giving and showing love to yourself, that is you programming in the energy of love. And that, you know, initially it has to be a really conscious thing, because if it's not natural for us to just think self-loving thoughts, we're going to have to sort of work to consciously set up a practice that will help us feel love or practice love. But I think what's really important about self-care and self-love is that it's never just done from, you know, obligation or need to or have to, or this is what I saw someone on Instagram do, or this will show to me that I'm practicing self-love. Like, we have to feel it. This is what we were talking about in one of the calls about, like, you know, being in the bath and being so in your head that you don't actually even feel the feeling of the water on your skin, you know? Like, it's actually like, if we're going to practice this stuff, the whole intention of it is to feel love, right? Is to feel loved, is to feel nurtured, is to feel cared for. So if you're ever noticing you're doing a self-care practice and you're actually not feeling those emotions, it's no point even really doing the practice. So I would say any practice, I've just heard a lot of people over the years share that, you know, self-care can just become like a to-do list, a task, and you don't really feel anything in it. I would say, like, let any self-care practice or self-love practice go that actually isn't creating that feeling you're wanting to feel. So you either let it go or change your approach to it. So, you know, we need to be really in our bodies rather than in our minds when we're doing this beautiful self-care and self-love work. And actually really letting what we're, you know, choosing to put our time into in that moment to be guided by our body rather than our mind. So actually being guided by what we're needing, what our body is craving, where our body's at. Like, the self-love practice and the self-care practice has to be so tailored to you and your unique experience in that moment. So it's about listening to your body and what it wants rather than giving your body what you think it wants. I think that's a really important one with food. Like, I think I used to give my body what I thought it wanted or needed or what seemed like the healthy choice rather than genuinely listening to what my body was asking for, which feels to me like a much more self-loving practice than forcing it to eat something that maybe it's not actually going to fully resonate with. And just ensuring that, you know, we're really, no, I already said that. This is my next point. The slowing down and the savoring of it. And we talked about that in another call. Like, that is a way that we actually make everything feel so much more loving, is slow down, savor, activate the senses, fully experience it, and actually really come into your heart around it too, and see if you can breathe in the feeling of being given to and being nurtured and being taken care of and being held and being prioritized and being shown affection and attention. And actually, like, the giving and receiving in yourself, like the soaking up of that in those practices. I've got a few more things to talk about on that, but I'm just going to open up and see if anyone feels to share anything on that. Any thoughts, reflections, or even actually over the years, I'd even love to know what has really deepened your feelings or experience of self-love in your own practice too, if there's anything I haven't mentioned here.
I just thought it was really funny because about an hour ago, when you were mentioning, you know, our mothers, my mom sent me this picture of herself. I don't know if you guys can see. It's a little hard to see, but yeah. It's such a beautiful photo. And I wrote back, "Oh, what a nice photo!" And her first reply was, "I don't really like my smile on this pic, in this picture." And I think what you mentioned, yeah, my whole time growing up, my mother, she was very unhappy with all aspects of herself. And as a child, I remember thinking it would always make every time she would make a comment, I would feel this like pain in my stomach of like, oh, like, why? And like, it would make me dislike myself. And I would get angry at her for not liking herself because I almost felt it was like not also liking me because I was such a reflection of her. And it's interesting. So I really resonate with that.
Did you say anything back to her when she said that?
I wrote back. No, I mean, I wrote back to her and told her, no, I thought it was a beautiful picture. And it's funny because she just, even when we say things to her, I don't know if she realizes, which makes me really, really sad that she doesn't see her own beauty.
And this is what's so interesting about when we have a core belief about ourselves, and you probably all know this, but the brain's always deleting and distorting and rejecting pieces of information that don't match our beliefs. So if someone has a fundamental belief, I'm not beautiful, or I don't like my smile, whatever it is, it doesn't matter what anyone else says. It's almost like your brain will like erase that bit of information because it doesn't fit your self-concept. So that's why the shifting at the core level of our perception of ourselves has to be the first thing to allow us to then receive from others what we're wanting. Or receive from life proof of that in ourselves. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, I'm the same in that sometimes there's forgiveness work for around our relationship with our mothers, like to forgive them for what they taught us unconsciously and the impact it's had on us and now the work we're having to do to unlearn what they taught us.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can feel anger and frustration, but to actually feel like, I mean, I feel heartbreak sometimes for my mom to know what she's carrying in herself about herself, how awful that is. That's allowed me to forgive hers, to understand her pain.
Yeah. And I think the second thing I realized as you're talking is, although I do a lot of those self-care practices, similar to what we were talking about, like the bath last week and things like this, although I do have a lot of respect and admiration for myself, I think my default still is to think the worst first of myself rather than the best. So like at work, for example, I'll automatically assume, oh, I'm not doing enough, or I'm not working fast enough, or other people are going to think I'm not doing enough, versus coming at anything with love, because it's safer to come at it with criticism, because then I can like catch something before someone else would catch it almost. Versus if I come at it with love, I may be blinded by like my own love for myself, and then someone else may see my feel first or something. So it feels scarier to just be so good to myself, because it's like, oh, what if I don't improve then? Or what if I don't catch the thing that I need to get better at?
Could both of them, I mean, work together and I mean, that I know it sort of feels like a negative thing, what you're noticing, and, you know, maybe it's not fully loving and supportive, but it's interesting because it does also, what am I trying to say? It does also help you see, I guess, to some extent, areas you want to improve, things you want to work on. And again, it's like improvement doesn't have to, maybe this is where the work is. Improvement doesn't have to come from what I'm doing right now is wrong. But it can help you then be like, well, yeah, how can I improve in this situation?
Yeah, maybe it's the thought process, like it doesn't have to be so wrong. It can just be like, yeah, like that's okay. And we still want more to be better, but it doesn't have to be like you're wrong in this moment.
Yeah, because I wonder, because wrongness creates a feeling of shame.
Yeah, because I think that's sometimes the thought pattern then.
Yeah. And so I wonder if, yeah, it's a little shift around that, because that might still fire off as your immediate initial way of thinking. But it's like, okay, cool. I'm glad I can see that. So I'm just aware of that. But then there doesn't need to be any more thought about it.
Yeah. Mm. That's a good way to reframe it. Mm.
Yeah. I think also, Connie, because I get that a lot as well, like having the compassion you talked about for yourself during that, going, oh my goodness, like, is that the way you treat yourself? How painful that is on an ongoing basis. Mm. And then shift it towards love.
Yeah, and the compassion is also like, I'm literally just here doing the very best that I can. Yeah, I'm not perfect, but I know that I'm doing the very best that I can with what I've got. Yeah. Every person's going to make mistakes, and that's life.
Yeah. Because I'm sitting here reading my emails this morning going, my boss is going, oh, how are you? Which he never normally does. And I'm like, is that because I'm going to be made redundant? Which is always the worst case scenario, but actually having compassion for yourself, for feeling that, to then hopefully change your behavior over time.
I just really realized
like I've struggled, like a few years ago I started working with a business coach who was really big on the self-care routine, and I really 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 struggled with it. But I think I was coming from that forcing, and not the, like, yes, you were trying to generate the feeling, but it was coming from force and the masculine side. And I've just realized, especially over the last few days or weeks, about how much that just doesn't really work. So really coming to myself love and my daily routine from a feeling point of view. And it's exactly what I tell my nutrition clients to do, like, listen to your body and what it wants. And it's just taking a leap out of that book and really kind of surrendering to it. And there's no good or bad, there's no right or wrong. And you can do whatever you want.
I also had another thought while you were talking, which is, behind all of these patterns of thinking is a fear, and a fear is a very tender emotion. Like when you were sharing, I was like, oh, maybe that thought came up, but actually behind that is maybe this fear of like, oh my gosh, like we're in uncertain times and I could lose my job. And that's actually, I think sometimes it's about getting out of what the thought and the story was and actually being like, oh, what am I really feeling here? And let me just honor that feeling that's coming up and be really gentle and tender with the fact that, there's a fear that people are going to think I'm not doing a very good job, or that means, again, my job is at risk. And I think when we can see like almost the tender vulnerability behind the thought, it again allows us to be more gentle with ourselves when it comes up. Like I've realized all of my crap that's going on in relationships is my fundamental fear that I'm going to lose him. And when I realize that, I'm like, oh, honey, you're ultimately just like so terrified you're going to lose him. All this behavior and thinking and everything is just masking that very tender, raw emotion. And actually allowing myself just to drop into that and feel that and connect with that, that softens me personally and allows me to be less hard on myself.
Yeah, wow. That's a really good point. The other thing I also just wanted to say is that when I started doing some of this work on myself, I then saw kind of a need initially to like fix my mum. because I see how much, like she, like we were discussing, she's trying to knit for her new granddaughter, well, granddaughter or grandson to be at the moment, and she just won't do it because she won't be perfect, and so she's resisting it. But I think my old way of being with her, and it still sometimes creeps in, was just trying to help her and fix it and telling like her what to do. And actually, I think going back to that compassion piece and really feeling into her and the pain that she must be feeling is a much better approach. And it also means it's less on my shoulders. I'm more with her rather than kind of superior to her. And it's really helped me with myself and not having to burden myself with other people's stuff as well.
So true. That we get to see, I'd either do this with my mom as well, almost like our relationship with ourselves reflected in how we relate to others. So yeah, with my mum, when I see her weaknesses and her flaws, I want to fix them and change them and improve her because that would make me feel better. And that's often what I want to do with myself, is try to get rid of these things that I think are my weaknesses or my flaws, and improve them versus, and this is tough work, but I've been really trying to let my mum just be who she is and just love her and accept her fully for it. And that's like, as I practice that with her, I'm learning how to do that with myself too. And it's beautiful.
Yeah, the unconditional love, which I never really thought about before. I never really thought what is unconditional love until you really probably talked about it. And it's the loving every part of you and every part of everyone else, based, except not based on what they do, which is my whole construct of love in my life.
Yep. Yeah. So good. Any other thoughts?
Thank you.
My pleasure. Good on that. Beautiful. All right. I've just got a few little final things to share. Where's my video? Spotlight. Okay. Hang on. Okay. Thanks. I was just going to share a few additional components on, I mean, some of you kind of probably already know all this stuff, but I still just want to talk about it. Obviously, the self-talk piece is a massive part of it. It's who haven't I got on mute yet?
Sorry, that's me in New York.
Oh, that's all right. No worries. Oh, good. Beautiful. Obviously, it's like the way we're thinking and the stories we're telling ourselves, but that voice in terms of how we talk to ourselves, it's a really hard one to catch because my boyfriend actually said this to me the other day. He was like asking me, he's like, what are some of the things that you say to yourself? I was talking to him about how women are often so hard on themselves. And he's like, well, what are some of the things that you say to yourself? And I was like, it's weird because I know I'm saying unsupportive stuff all the time. But if you asked me to tell you what those thoughts were, I don't know exactly. I can't think of them because they are really happening so unconsciously, which is why the catch, witness, choose again is so important. If we can catch these thoughts when they happen, what we're doing is bringing them from the unconscious kind of default up to conscious awareness. And then we're able to work through them more. And then they're not just flying under the radar without us even realizing. I'm much better at actually noticing these in the moment and being like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I just said that. Rather than if someone was to say to me, what are the negative things you say about yourself? I'm like, oh, that's really tough to kind of think of sometimes. I might be able to think of some. I had a thought and then it disappeared. No, that's right. What I used to do actually when I would notice myself saying something awful, the way I'd break that pattern is I would go to the mirror and look in my eyes and apologize right away. Connie, I'm so sorry that I said that to you. I shouldn't have spoken to you like that. You don't deserve that. That was awful. I love you and I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And that's what I would do. I mean, if I spoke to my partner in an awful way because I was frustrated, I would apologize to him. And that was actually a really cool pattern interrupt for me that I did when I was really working on stopping the negative way I was speaking to myself is I would, like look deep in my eyes and apologize the minute that I noticed I was saying that. Can be a really, really beautiful thing to do. And, you know, being aware of this self-talk is just so important because it's guiding everything. That inner voice is guiding our choices, our actions, our decisions, what we believe we're capable of, what we want to create and manifest in our lives, like all of it. So even if it's just part of the work over the next few weeks is just to bring more awareness to that and be interrupting any of the patterns you notice, it's really, really powerful work. And I also do believe, and I know some people are a bit whatever about affirmations and stuff like that, because you don't necessarily just want to put a positive affirmation over unresolved stuff. So it's not just about never looking at the negative and just trying to be like, I think, what does Tony Robbins say? He's like trying to throw pink paint over everything, or trying to like, what does he gives the analogy of like standing in a garden full of weeds and just saying there's no weeds. Like, it's not about trying to like avoid it. I think it's working on breaking the patterns of the negative, but then also consciously working on programming in wherever we can more positive ways of thinking. So I'm all for the, like, I know we talked about mirror work, sitting in front of the mirror, looking in your own eyes, saying things to yourself that you really need to hear and that you really need to know, and new ways of thinking you're wanting to program in. The other day, my boyfriend and I watched the story of the, you know, Mr. Emoto, the Japanese, what was he? He was Japanese something, photographer maybe, but he took photographs of water molecules and would photograph them when he would put the words love and you are loved and send beautiful energy to them. And then he would take photographs of the water, the water crystals, when he would say, I hate you and horrible things about it. And the water crystals change shape, and the ones that got the love were beautiful and symmetrical and radiant. And the ones that were judged and criticized were like brown and distorted. And considering our body is made up of so much water, we can't underestimate how much our physiology, our cells, our DNA, everything is responding to how we're talking. So, you know, I think affirmations in the mirror, I think writing out desire statements, writing out, you know, beautiful new thoughts you want to practice about yourself, all of that is really valuable work if we want to consciously be reprogramming our minds and our nervous systems to be more based on love. And I think all of you are already doing this. I don't think I need to kind of repeat it, but this listening to and honoring of our wants and needs, I think we all are always going to have opportunities to practice this more deeply. But, you know, before, if we can, before committing to something, before saying yes to something, before putting, you know, something in our calendar, before moving ahead with anything, just that real check-in with yourself, because most of us who are big-hearted, generous women are fantastic at giving and fantastic at doing. And something I really had to learn is to not be so automatic in making commitments and saying yes to things or offering to help people, but really give myself a chance to sink into and feel into how that feels to me, whether that's a yes to me, whether that's in alignment with me, whether that's going to support what I'm needing in this moment, or, you know, how does my body respond to it? Does my body tense up and be like, oh, I don't want to do that? Or does it relax and soften and say, yes, I want to? So this is one of the ways we break out of overgiving to others and not giving to ourselves, is we actually pause to consult ourselves and check in with ourselves before we are making decisions or anything. And this was a big thing that I practiced around, you know, a friend texts you and says, do you want to catch up on the weekend? And sometimes I just automatically reply yes. And I give myself a time frame now, like I give myself, even before big decisions, 24 hours to really sit with it and feel into it and find my own truth before I commit. And to me, that's a really powerful way to honor myself. And you know, this ongoing practice, which we maybe have talked about, but and I teach it all the time, it's pretty basic, but just the continual checking in of what am I feeling and what am I needing, knowing that that's going to constantly be evolving and changing. I have to do it all the time, is actually just like check in and be like, whoa, like what emotion is there for me right now? Where is my body at? Where is my energy at? And what am I needing today or right now in this moment to support me? And ensuring that what is guiding us and driving us in every moment where possible, obviously we can't do this all the time because we do have commitments. And I think this ties into, actually, Emma posted a really good question in the group around how do we honor our feminine while also showing up for what we need to do. So you might want to read my response to her question in there if that resonates with you. But it's, I think this big self-honoring work is really looking at what is always driving us in any moment. Are we being driven by what we need to do and have to do and should do, what someone else wants us to do? Or are we really listening to our bodies and our hearts and our desires and what's important to us? And I've just found in my life, the more that I've honored myself and put that first and had to have the courage to say no and at times disappoint people or have people not agree with me or not like what I'm doing, I think my confidence in myself has grown in that, because I feel very self-respectful. Rather than, I know for me, I might make everyone else happy, but it's like I feel crap about myself because I know I'm not acting in alignment with me and with what I really need. So just that chance we give ourselves to pause wherever we can and check in with ourselves. What do we need? What are we feeling? What do we want to do? And you can't always necessarily act on it. Like if I was to be honest, I woke up this morning and I was like, oh, I just really want to go for a walk. But I'm like, no, I've got this class to do. So I'm going to show up for this class and I'm going to go for a walk as soon as the class is finished. So I sort of negotiate with myself there and I'm like, I hear what you really desire, but we've got to show up for this and then you can do that. And that's how I kind of work with those elements of myself. And then just the final piece, which I think we talked about at another time too, but just the soothing and supporting of our own emotions too. So being able to, when we need it, really hold space for ourselves to go into our feelings and never make our feelings wrong, never be mindful of that voice that says you're overreacting, you shouldn't be feeling this way, you don't have time to feel this, this is inconvenient. But I think the deep honoring of our inner experience, whatever it is, whatever it is. I mean, I was so emotional yesterday and I just had to just allow that and accept that and not judge myself for it and just let it move through me. So I think just the whole theme of this is the unconditional love and support and acceptance of all of us, all of what makes us us, and honoring that wherever we can, supporting ourselves through that wherever we can, and choosing to bring in love wherever we can. And the work's gonna go on forever, but how beautiful is that? We never have to feel like we're failing if we're not doing it perfectly, because we're always gonna get another opportunity to practice it for as long as we live. So we can always improve on anything that feels like it's an ongoing area of work for us. Oh, my lighting's real dark, but you know, whatever. Cancel the spotlight gallery. All right, any final thoughts, or does anyone want to share how they're feeling as we're wrapping up this class, or any like key takeaways that you haven't shared as yet? Or anything that you would love to practice as a result of this class?
I think it's interesting about the mother stuff. There's so much mother stuff for me to work on. And I've worked on it for years. All my eating disorders were pretty much taught to me from my mother. She pretty much hated her body, and at least from my experience of her, I don't know that she ever really liked it. Maybe when she was anorexic, she did. I have no idea. But there's always this like control your body. And if you're not in control of it, then you're a terrible person. And I now am going through menopause. And let me tell you, you have no control over your body when you're going through that. And I'm only just barely, I'm actually in the peri stage of it, and it's been really interesting. And my first initial thoughts was like, I'm putting on weight where I don't put on weight, like what the fuck is happening? And a lot of shame and hatred, and I've had eating disorders, but I'm not eating, I don't have any disordered eating now. I'm doing fine with food. But it has been very interesting for me in terms of accepting my body, like you said, not loving it, but accepting that, you know, I've never put on weight on my stomach. That's always been a place where I didn't, but I had bigger thighs. And now I'm like, well, my thighs are really strong. And my stomach is just, that's just how they're handling my hormones right now. And it could be worse if my body couldn't metabolize my hormones, then God knows what else would be going on. So that's sort of how that's happening. So it's just sort of an acceptance. I don't love it. I don't like it, but it's okay. It's not the end of the world. It doesn't mean I'm a terrible person. It doesn't mean I'm not attractive or beautiful or sensual. I mean, another thing is, you know, since I've gained weight, I used to be very flat chested and now I have breasts, and I have to say, I really love that. I'm like, ooh, you know, there's this sensuality there that I didn't have in my 20s and 30s and 40s. Well, I'm not 50 yet, but I will be. But it's been like over the last 2 years, it's been like, that's really interesting. And at first I hated them. I was like, they're too big. But now I'm through this process, I'm like, they're kind of actually awesome. Yeah, they feel really good. And I'm enjoying that. So that's been a really interesting thing for me, but I totally related, Stefania, when you were talking about wanting to change your mom or help her. Cause you know, a huge part of me getting over my stuff was seeing how my mother has struggled. And my mother now has dementia and Alzheimer's, and she is eating with no eating disorder at all. She has finally found her love of food, and even her dietitian, she said to me, it's been such a pleasure getting to know your mom, because she came in eating like an anorexic and now she loves food. And I thought, you know, God, let me not wait till I'm demented to enjoy food. But it took her that was her path. And I can kind of find a little giggle in it, maybe some sadness, but also she's found it now. Mm-hmm. And she's really well, she's doing great, she still remembers who I am, and she's enjoying food. Mm-hmm. For the first time in 78 years or 75 years. She's 78 now, so I don't know, 75 years, she's finally enjoying food. So that's been really an interesting, like, love, not love, hate, but love and discomfort and interesting journey through that.
Yeah.
And that it really resonated for me what you were saying, Connie, about just accepting it. You don't have to love it, but you don't want to hate it.
Mm.
I think my other thing about that is I remember talking to someone about them not liking themselves. I said, you have a couple choices. You can have plastic surgery and change it or not. And like if it's your nose or whatever. And if you choose to not have and I don't care, have the plastic surgery or don't, I don't have judgments about that. But if you choose not to, then you bloody well accept it.
Mm.
Because why fight with it?
Mm.
You know, it's like the wrinkles on my face. I could go and get Botox, but it scares me, so I don't. So I just have to accept them. I don't see the other alternative. I can't fight with myself. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. And even when you were talking about your body, I was even feeling like there's actually some new elements here to enjoy. If the way you describe your body, mm-hmm. it sounds more feminine. It sounds like that it will add to experience of sensuality.
Yeah.
There's different, like your body feels different. So the touch and experience of your body will be different.
It's very different.
Yeah. There's some beautiful things to enjoy in that.
Yeah. And I think at first I was like, oh, they're too big. Which is so funny because I'm sure most men would say there's never too big, but you know, when you're used to being smaller, and I was like, but now I'm really like, what can I wear today that's gonna make me feel really good?
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, yeah, I'm enjoying it. It's feeling really nice. It really is.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Any other final thoughts from the other women?
Just from my point of view, I thought that was I think it's so true. I think just to love and accept yourself, however you show up. And I definitely look in my mirror every morning and probably don't say the best things for myself. But I think just really nurturing this time working at home, because actually I really like that idea of apologizing to yourself in the mirror. Because I've been like reading book about making sure, like with a lover, for example, like opening yourself, looking into them. But I've got to be able to look into myself first. So really doing that mirror work to really make sure I'm really loving and nurturing myself, apologizing to myself, whilst also, so I think like whilst I'm here, when I've got a mirror right here, well, 5 steps away. So when I hear that, I can actually go and do that throughout the day. And also, which I'm kind of looking forward to, and obviously in the morning, and also I just wrote a note to myself to write a note on Canva and do a background for my phone asking me, what am I feeling? And I can't remember what the other question was that you asked, or what am I needing? Because I don't think I'm getting better at it. I now do it in the mornings when I wake up, but it's not a conscious habit all of the time. So I'm going to put a note on my phone. Mm. So whenever I look on the phone, I can then just check in with myself and see how I'm feeling and what I'm needing, to just develop that more conscious awareness. Because you can even do things that you think are really nurturing for yourself, but you do it in such an unconscious way, it kind of defeats the object of it. So
yeah,
I'm just going to keep on checking in with myself and making sure that I'm not letting the superficial things that are going well in my life that I'm used to using for loving myself, just making sure that's not clouding over everything else.
Beautiful. Yep.
Mm. I'm going to re-listen to this whole call as well, because I think it was great and so many useful takeaways.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so glad. Thank you for being here. Yeah. Yeah, But what am I feeling and what do I need? It's such simple questions, but what I found interesting about the more that I practice it is I become aware that I'm feeling something I didn't even realize I was feeling. Like, you didn't even realize it was there. And it's such an opportunity to, like, even something as simple as sometimes I'm working and I'm like, what am I feeling? And I'm like, I'm starving. I didn't even realize I'm hungry. I really need a break and some food, because we can get so disconnected when we're in the doing. And just that simple practice just brings you in again.
And I often, like last week, I was with my psychotherapist and I was really struggling. I often struggle to understand how I feel. And she really helped me with like shutting my eyes. And you talked a bit about it earlier in the meditation, and just, for example, just shutting your eyes and feeling into your body, but by putting pressure on your different parts of your legs and then putting your hand over your heart and your stomach. And it really helps me to really tap in to my body, because if I just shut my eyes and I go, how do I feel, Charlotte? I go, I have no freaking clue sometimes. So really just like feeling that energy. And it's amazing how much energy your body has in it without me even realizing.
Yeah, that's a beautiful point. Agreed. And it's similar to what we were saying about, you know, there's no point in these practices if they're just heady. The whole point is to feel. So something like that really helps you actually find the feeling in that practice, rather than just the, oh, what am I feeling? What do I need? Oh, I don't know. Oh, I'll keep working. Versus I'm letting you really like feel the body and like actually anchor in and find what's there.
Yeah.
Mm, beautiful. Stefania, any final thoughts?
Can I help you, Stefania? I called you Natanya by accident, and it's Stefania. I'm so sorry, babe. I was like, I think I got her name wrong, but no, you knew I was talking about
you. I didn't even realize you said Natanya. I just heard my actual name. No worries. I think for me, I'm not sure if I can explain it, but at some point when you were talking, Connie, I think it was about like the self-love aspect. I just kind of like dropped into feeling love for myself and just like feeling relief of like, oh, like I don't need to like try more or do more, like just can just be. And I think I realized that most of my day is just operating this mindset of do like be more. And I'm wondering how I can bring more of that relief feeling where like you can just like let the shoulders down a bit into the moments when I'm also in some ways needing to do more. Like it might be a work scenario or it might be something where I do need to kind of push myself, but not feel that defensive, uncomfortable, like you're not enough in this moment feeling, and like feel the love feeling that just feels like just this relief of like peace and like safety. Cause I realize most of my operating day to day is not in that mindset. So that's something that I want to think about, how to just bring, cause it's like pushing love away, like not now, like can't have love right now, like I'll have love like when I can relax and like when I don't need to do these things or when I'm safe, or but then it never comes anyway.
Yeah, I think it's maybe just taking a moment to feel and connect with that energy before you step into the thing you're going to be doing. I've noticed this with my work. It's like I'm great, I embody pleasure and love and self-care and all that stuff all the time, but not when I work. When I work, I immediately go into like shoulders up and jaw tense and like rah, rah, rah. And I'm like, why can't I bring the same level of pleasure or self-connection or self-love into my work? And so sometimes it's just that intention of like, oh, I'm sitting down to do something. Where's my body at? What am I noticing? Am I pushing? Or, okay, let me just take like a breath. Find that energy of just like, there's, you know, where I am right now is perfect and I'm just going to be, and find that feeling and that energy and see if you can move forward then into what you're wanting to do with that energy. And then at different points you might notice your back tense again, and then take a breath and just bring yourself back in. And that's definitely something I'm working on, because I just default to a certain way of functioning when I
work.
Beautiful. Thank you beautiful women for being here, for your input. I'll get this class up for you, and I look forward to hearing about everything you'd be working on over the coming weeks. So just keep coming in and sharing with us in the group, and I'll talk to you all soon in our next class.
Okay.
Stay safe and well.
Bye everyone.
Thank you so much. Bye. Beautiful class. Thank you so much, Connie. Love you.
Bye. And I love your recent podcast as well. I've been listening to that nonstop.
It was so awesome. Cool. I'm so glad.
Me too.
All right. Bye, loves.
Bye. Bye.